This is the Mizzou Sports Podcast, presented by the Columbia Daily Tribune.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Columbia Tribune Sports Podcast. I guess it's actually now the Mizzou Sports Podcast. It's only been like that for about 4 months now, five months. The Mizzou Sports Podcast, presented by the Columbia Daily Tribune. I'm Danny Jones, and with me is Cameron Teague Robinson. We're here to talk about some Mizzou basketball, some Mizzou football, lots of stuff going on. It's been a crazy week for both programs, really, with the football team making a change. It wasn't their call, but new offensive coordinator coming in with Josh Heupel going to Central Florida. You have Mizzou basketball getting into a four-game homestand after beating Miami of Ohio. And then you have women's basketball taking on SLU tomorrow on Friday, continuing their non-conference slate. Pretty exciting times. I see you got your North Face on.
Yep.
You are gearing up for the dead of winter.
Yep. And I don't feel well either, so it's just...
You got your Ned Stark on. You need to get a big fur coat.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And we need a Game of Thrones chair.
We do.
That'd be sweet.
That would be sweet.
This would be my office. That would never work anywhere else.
Not at home, not in the sports department.
No, just in this room where no one knows where it is.
Just in this room, the secret room inside the Tribune's department.
I'm going to actually close the door to the secret room in the Tribune's department.
So nobody can find us.
Exactly.
All right. Well, without further ado, we'll just get right to the good stuff. So we'll start with men's basketball, which beat Miami of Ohio on Tuesday night.
Was that Tuesday? Yep.
Tuesday night, score was
70-51.
Mm-hmm. The game was pretty close through the first half, and then through parts of the second half, like, Mizzou didn't really pull away until midway through the second half. What were your thoughts on that? Because Konzo Martin came into the post-game press conference.
Not happy.
Not very happy at all.
Yeah, he called out everybody. He called out Jordan Barnett right away, Kevin Purrier, Jeremiah Tillman, really everybody. Mm-hmm. I thought the biggest takeaway was his quote where he said, "I thought the team who played the hardest didn't win."
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was my biggest takeaway from his press conference. And rightfully so. They didn't play well. There was there's no energy even in the fans. The Mizzou Arena was not what we've seen it this year. And then you could see there was no energy on the floor. So I don't know. I think Konzo had a reason to be displeased with everything, but I don't think Konzo's ever ungrateful for a win. He says that in every press conference. I'm grateful for a win. Wins don't come easy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he was a little bit. He wasn't impressed by the way his team played against a team who they could have probably beat by 30.
Yeah, the offense really struggled in the first half. Like, they didn't really get anything going
until Cassius and Jordan got going towards the end there.
Then after the game, Konzo Martin's asked about Jordan Barnett, who had 15 points and 8 rebounds.
8 rebounds, yeah.
Then he goes, "I didn't think Jordan played very well at all."
Exactly. He had 15 and 8, but I didn't think he played well at all, really. Word is cool. And I was like, "What? Okay."
All right.
That was really what opened everybody's eyes.
You can continue to voice your opinion. We'll gladly take those kind of, insights into your mind. Obviously it wasn't Missouri playing to their best, but in a non-conference game in December after going on the road to Utah, to Orlando, and then back to Orlando. It's your first game back after 4 straight games in Orlando against a couple of really good teams. And St. John's is going to be decent this year. West Virginia is going to be really good, I think, throughout the year. And then
Central Florida,
Central Florida's a solid team.
Yeah, when they get healthy, they could be a bubble team.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty difficult run of games in your first game back. Obviously they're not playing up to their potential, but it's good to have a high standard with what you want out of your team.
Right.
But I was surprised to hear him say the things that he said.
Same.
So where do you see there being a lot of improvement for this team? If you had to single out people who you think or parts of the team, like, where's the ceiling? Where can they continue to improve?
Well, I people who have impressed me in their growth, Jeremiah Tillman being one of them. I think you can truly see him, want to stay out of foul trouble. He's focusing on keeping his hands up, not coming down on defenders, different things like that. So Is that going to work?
That'll come back eventually, right. I think.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Podcast listeners, we're trying to figure out if the Facebook Live is going to reconnect. We've had some technical difficulties the last
few
weeks.
Yeah, we did have some technical
difficulties. Oh,
here it goes.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, no, I thought Jeremiah Tillman was one of them. I think you can truly see him trying to stay out of foul trouble. But like Coach said, he still has to stay aggressive with that.
It kind of takes a little bit of an edge off, I think, when he does that. Yeah. I mean, he just hasn't been – he's still got some really impressive flashes, especially on offense. When his instincts offensively are so good.
Incredible, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just things that, like, you see veterans do, you know, when he can catch in transition, he did that. I remember there was one play where it was like a play in transition, and somebody, it was a great feed, and Jeremiah reached up, caught the ball, and then in one motion, I mean, it was like all, it was just great balance, great footwork, like in one motion, just caught it right up here above his head and dunked it.
Yeah,
I mean, it
yeah.
was like there was no chance for any defender to make a play because he never brought the ball down.
Right.
He never had to regain his balance. It was just fluid.
Right.
So it was like offensive instincts and his what he does naturally on offense is so good. But defensively, when he's like his first priority is not fouling, you can tell that takes a little bit away from what he does. He's not as effective blocking or affecting shots, nor is he as effective a rebounder.
Right. Although he did have that emphatic block in the second half.
Mm. Yeah, that's
Miami
true.
Game. He
that actually put a guy on the floor.
Yeah, exactly.
He not only put the ball on the floor,
yeah.
he put the guy on the floor.
Right, right.
Not bad, not
so,
bad.
So he's a big one. I think, too, and just we won't take forever on this, but impressive-wise, I think Cassius Robertson has been pretty impressive. The way he got out of his shooting slump early in the season. I think he's been their best offensive player. I think this is what everybody thought you could get out of him when you come in and you see he's a 40% three-point shooter.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, this kid's going to be able to put up some points. And he's been the one who, hey, both him and Jordan Barnett, but even Cassius, going back to the Long Beach State game, have been the ones who sparked Mizzou runs when they start
two
slow.
Seniors.
Yeah.
Two seniors have done that both times.
Right. But in terms of something that needs to be picked up, it's just a point guard play.
Yeah.
I mean, they got to keep control of the ball.
Yeah, I think
they have to figure out who the point guard is.
That's been a big hole in this team, and you kind of wondered what direction they were going to go before the season, and they haven't really committed to one.
Right.
They started with Cassius Robertson being the guy, and I think after a couple games, Konzo Martin decided he didn't want to do that. He wanted Cassius to do what he's always done, which is catch and shoot. And then he's started Blake Harris, but he hasn't really rode Blake Harris out. You
right.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's almost like he's kind of dipping his toe in the water with Blake Harris. What can he do?
Yeah.
And he's been okay, but you know, again, flashes Blake Harris has shown, but not on a consistent level. Terrence Phillips has been up and down, but he's really kind of struggling to have a consistent impact.
Right. He played. He had a good game against Central Florida,
mm-hmm.
and then played 6 minutes or 7 minutes Tuesday night against Miami, Ohio.
And you were saying like it was one of his first. He was the first one off the bench in that game.
The first one back to the bench.
And one of like his first play was what?
Well, it wasn't his first play. I think I want to say he had a turnover on his first possession, but he had a few nice possessions after that, and then he got ripped by a power forward on the perimeter. He wasn't in the paint. He was on the perimeter and got the ball taken out of his hand. And then they go on the fast break, and he fouls him, and he gets an and-one foul. And at that point, you're just like...
it's like Konzo Martin's got strike one.
Yeah.
Like the ball gets stolen.
Exactly.
Foul, or like basket, strike two,
yep,
foul
strike three.
Okay,
the
back.
Exactly. And you didn't see him until the second half after that, and even then he was only out there for a little bit.
Yeah.
It seems like Konzo has a short lease when it comes to turnovers with his point guards. Like, if you're not producing, you're going to sit down.
Yeah.
And then we're going to get somebody else in there who's going to produce.
And that leaves Jordan Geist, who's actually played quite a bit for this team, but has also been up and down. I mean, he's done some good things. I thought pretty well.
Yeah, he's Miami had 4 assists, 0 turnovers. Yeah.
You know, which is good. After
another person, Konzo Martin, got on after in the press conference.
Said he needs to play better defense,
yeah,
which he did. I mean, he did give up a lot of, a lot of times got beat off the dribble.
Yeah, and that's not something you expect from him, especially
against
my beloved Mid-American Conference.
The MAC.
The MAC.
The powerhouse conference that is the MAC.
But yeah, you don't expect him to get beat off the dribble by guys from Miami, Ohio.
Right.
Yeah.
Going back to Jeremiah Tillman, you're doing a big story on Jeremiah Tillman that's running this weekend, right?
Next weekend, Saturday. 16th.
Okay.
Yep.
What is the most impressive thing that you've seen him do this year after watching him and then also maybe talking with some other people that have watched him closely this year.
I guess it's just his footwork. I don't know. It's, I don't know if there's a play that stands out in particular, because a lot of them kind of gel together.
Mm-hmm.
But when he gets his back to the basket, because you look at Jeremiah Tillman as like this physical force.
Yeah.
And that's what everybody says. He's just, he's stronger than everybody. He's more physical than everybody. I think that stems back to his wrestling background. But
this, I can't, we'll save the good parts for the story that okay. you write. But Jeremiah Tillman as a wrestler is a just a, it's like, it's illuminating.
It is.
You know, you put the pieces together, it's like, that guy used to be a wrestler?
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, now I can kind of see it
exactly,
a little bit.
Yeah, and it just, you can just see it in his physical nature. Like, he doesn't mind contact. But when he has the ball back to the basket, he's just so fluid and so smooth. It's just, it's incredible to watch sometimes. So I think that's probably been the most impressive thing to me. I'm trying to think of one in specific play, but I can't really think of one. It's just like every time he gets the ball with his back to the basket, like you see him dunking a lot right now, but when he gets his back to the basket and he's able to make a move, it's just like, man, that kid's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good. Like a lot of people thought he was going to be really raw coming into the season, but he's not that at all.
Right.
He's very, very solid with his back to the basket.
And it's not just dunks. I mean, he does that a lot, but he's also within about 6 to 8 feet. Like if he's right there by that restricted circle, he's got great touch.
Yeah, he does.
Like on little floaters and bunnies that are right there, he doesn't miss those very often. And Missouri hasn't had a guy like that in a long time who can consistently hit those. It makes me wonder how wrestling and basketball, that's not a combination you have, because a lot of times in high school they're going on at the same time.
Yeah.
But and you think about the physical profile of a wrestler,
you can get a lot of fouls like Jeremiah Tillman does.
Yeah, so that part checks out.
Yeah.
But like the best wrestlers are kind of shorter, powerful guys. Yeah. They're solid, right?
You run into them and you're falling down.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Best basketball players are tall, long-armed, lanky guys.
Yeah.
So the physical profile doesn't really match up. But when you see all the things that Jeremiah Tillman does and the way he moves and his balance and all the things he does to get open and stay open down low on offense, it's like, wow, that really makes a lot of sense. Like, he's great with body position.
Right.
Of course, on defense, he's hitting people, inadvertently, but that contact isn't good.
Yeah.
It just makes me wonder what that would be like if more basketball players had a wrestling background.
I
stand on this hill that it's not common.
No, I agree, it's not. I don't think it is either. And I think the thing with wrestlers is that, because wrestling is so technical based, all your moves have to be done in a specific way, specific timing, if you want to get the upper hand on the person you're going against. So I think that's where Jeremiah has the upper hand with his footwork. Because when you're going through wrestling techniques, your feet and your hands have to be on par.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when I was talking to some people who have known him for a while, and they were saying the Jeremiah Tillman we see now isn't the Jeremiah Tillman he's always. He was a very tall, very clumsy kid when he first started playing basketball.
Really?
Yeah, that's what they were saying.
So kind of like a baby giraffe.
Yeah.
Like a newborn baby giraffe.
Yeah, exactly. And as he's kind of worked on, he's kind of come into his own.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So Mizzou plays Green Bay this weekend. Big matchup there. Green Bay, not the Packers.
No.
I think there's probably going to be a lot of people that I was talking with my dad. He was in town this weekend. Mm-hmm. He was looking at his phone on the upcoming matchups and said Green Bay. It's like, wait a second. Is this the right sport? Is this college basketball? So anyway.
Horizon League.
Right. Green Bay will come to Mizzou. And there's an interesting connection that Konzo Martin talked about in his press conference today about the connection between Mizzou and Green Bay, which is he knows the head coach.
The head coach, Link. I can't think of his name off the top of my head.
I'm going to do some research.
Yeah, I'm going to look it up.
You're going to look it up?
Yeah. But the two played together at Purdue.
Both were players at Purdue.
Right. They're both under the Gene Katie coaching tree.
Mm-hmm.
What am I doing? So Coach Martin, I guess they played together for 3 years. While they were at Purdue,
mm-hmm.
And obviously Coach Martin came back and coached at Purdue, and Coach Martin was talking about it in the press conference about like coaching against your friends. Why he personally doesn't like to do it, because Link Darner, that's who it is.
That's the head coach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Konzo said he didn't really like to do it just because he said this is like their livelihood. It's not a game. I mean, it's a game, but it's not to them. It's their careers. It's how they pay for, they feed their families and all that. So he really doesn't like coaching against his friends. He said if this game and the Miami-Ohio game who I think is Clark Owens, the head coach of Miami, Ohio. He coached at Purdue when Konzo coached at Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that. But if he didn't have those two games weren't scheduled, he wouldn't have played them.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't like playing against his friends. But he has to, and it's kind of just something he's going to have another Purdue Jim Katie coaching tree product at Mizzou Arena.
That reminds me of you kind of talk about how that becomes awkward when coaches know each other mm-hmm. and they play each other, especially in games like this where the outcome is kind of expected.
Right, right.
Mizzou should win the game, yes. Right?
Pretty handily.
Last year, Missouri hosted Eastern Illinois, and I remember it was kind of an interesting angle. Jay Spoonhour was the coach at Eastern Illinois, and so his dad, Charlie Spoonhour, had a connection with Kim Anderson. They were had something to do with their histories coaching and. Charlie Spoonhour is, of course, a legendary coach, and Kim Anderson thought very highly of him. So Jay Spoonhour and Kim Anderson were close. Eastern Illinois came to Mizzou Arena last year, beat Mizzou in a big upset. And Eastern Illinois was not very good. I mean, mm-hmm. They've been kind of a middling program in whatever conference they're in.
Yeah, I don't
remember. After the game, Jay Spoonhour, in his post-game press conference, obviously excited about the win. I mean, that's a big win, even mm-hmm. if you're – even with Mizzou being the team they were last year,
right.
That was a big win to beat a Southeastern Conference team. But you could tell there was just this real kind of awkward, it wasn't joy. It was kind of like he was excited that they won, but he had also just beaten a close friend of his in a game that his friend was expected to win.
Yeah.
And so you could tell there was kind of some trepidation. He was just he was excited, but didn't really show it very much. Right. And so that's kind of, it reminds me of that dynamic. I don't anticipate Missouri will lose this weekend to Green Bay, but when you coach against people that you know, sometimes it feels, it's good to win, but also you're in conflict.
In his case, he probably knew Kim was on the hot seat as well.
Oh, 100%.
So you're not only do you pull an upset win, so you're excited about that, but and then it's a friend who's on the hot seat.
Yeah,
you're just like, oh man,
what have I done?
Exactly,
you're pulling. I want to win. But
you're pulling him aside in the hallway. Say, Kim, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to win that game.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
But yeah.
Well, check in real quick.
Yeah.
On the SEC in their basketball league, I guess. What team would you pick as the best basketball team in the SEC right now? Florida look like they might be, like, through 30 minutes against Duke.
Yeah.
They look like they were probably the best team in the SEC.
That was just off their big Gonzaga win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now they've lost three in a row, including they lost last night to Loyola.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what the heck?
Yeah, what is that?
So
yeah.
What team would you pick right now to be the best in the SEC?
Probably Texas A&M. They've just been, coming in, they were in my top three in the SEC, but they've been incredible all year so far.
Mm-hmm.
I think their one loss is Arizona?
Yeah, they just lost to Arizona on Tuesday by 1 point in Tucson.
To lose in Tucson, and while Arizona isn't ranked.
It was neutral, sorry. It was a neutral site game.
While Arizona isn't ranked. That's an incredibly talented team. Like in terms of talent, they're a top five team in the country.
Yeah.
So that's not a bad loss to Texas A&M. I thought they've been the best team by far in the SEC this year.
Mm-hmm.
According to the SEC standings, they have the second best record in the SEC, 7-1, because Mississippi State's 7-0, and who Danny and I have just found out have not left Starkville all season.
7-0, all seven games at home.
And they have not played many.
That's not going to do anything for your RPI.
Not at all.
Mississippi State, just saying.
So I think Texas A&M has been the best team in the SEC so far. Probably Kentucky, too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, without a doubt, I think it's Texas A&M.
Okay. I think you're probably right there. They've just been really, really, really good.
Now we still have a month till SEC play starts, so all that can change very quickly.
Oh, 100%. That's the way it was with Florida.
Right.
A lot of people would have said Florida a week and a half ago, yeah. And that's definitely changed. So it can go back and forth quickly.
Where do you put Mizzou right now?
That's a good question. I think A&M is definitely up at the top. I think Kentucky's right there at the top. Arkansas is a really good team this year. I'd say they're a top five team in the SEC. I still think Florida is maybe if Florida and Mizzou played tomorrow night, I think Florida would probably be pretty heavily favored in that game.
Agree, yeah.
So Florida should be up there, and I think Georgia too. They're 7-1. They won two games on the road. They've looked pretty solid so far this year. There's a lot of teams that are right up there. Tennessee's looked really good. A lot of, I mean, they were picked to finish last in the conference.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's tough. I'd say they're probably in the top half, maybe like fifth or sixth.
That's around where I was thinking.
Is kind of where a lot of people thought they would be.
Right, and that was what I thought they would be with Michael Porter Jr.
Right.
But yeah, I think you're right. You're looking at Texas A&M, Kentucky, Florida. I think you probably put Alabama above them,
mm-hmm.
just for the Colin Sexton factor.
Mm-hmm.
Arkansas being one of those teams as well. And then, again, you can make the argument Georgia, Tennessee, a few others. I'm very surprised to see Vandy 3-6, but they played a heck of a schedule.
Yeah, that's been a rough slog.
Yeah.
Three of those losses have been at home, but they've also played Virginia. They've played USC.
USC was an overtime loss at home.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that game.
So it's a tough start for Vanderbilt, but overall pretty competitive league.
Agreed.
Through the first month and a half of the season. Now, they had men's basketball media day today, and then immediately following they had women's basketball media day, so we'll touch on that real quick before we get to football.
Yep.
Mizzou will play SLU tomorrow, mm-hmm. so the women's basketball team will play SLU tomorrow, which is kind of an important game in terms of historical context because last year Mizzou lost 72-61, despite holding what was almost a 20-point lead in that game. Mizzou was outscored 34-8 in the fourth quarter lost.
That's nuts.
What was, I guess, the highlight of the press conference, the women's press conference for you?
I don't know. It kind of touched on a lot of things in the women's press conference. Not a lot of things, but it's just kind of going a little bit everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Sophie made the statement of that. They're not really looking at it as a revenge game. I mean, she said she doesn't even remember that they were up 18 points. She just remembered losing the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess she said it's just another chance. She sees it as, and this is her quote, it's another team in our way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they have a chance to win 8 straight. I just think they're kind of focused on right now. I don't know if they're really looking back to what last year. I know they've talked about it. Robin said that probably the kids have probably talked about it in the locker room, and they've talked to them about it, but not in a sense of, hey, we need to make up for what we did last year. Just like, hey, this is what happened last year. Let's just remember when you're up 18 points, don't blow it again. I mean, in a sense.
That great advice.
Exactly.
Call timeout. Don't blow it, guys. Come
on. It's like telling a wide receiver not to catch the ball.
Don't drop it.
Right, exactly.
Don't drop it.
But yeah, I just think it's just probably, more than anything, it's probably just things where they've talked to, like, hey, this is what we learned from this game, remember, to just continue to get better from that game.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I think that's probably the best way to put it.
Tigers have really bounced back after a rough opening to the season where they lost to Western Kentucky. They're now back to pretty much where they were in the rankings, I believe number 17 in the country after starting at 16.
Yep.
So they're pretty much right where they were. They're still one of the, I would say, probably three best teams in the SEC behind Mississippi State and South Carolina.
Yep.
They're that talented. Amber Smith played really well in their most recent victory. Sophie's been pretty solid. They've benefited from Jordan Frerichs coming back. So they've definitely got a lot. I mean, it's kind of like what we said at the beginning of the season. They got a lot of girls that can score, and they've been pretty solid this year. So big game this weekend coming up against SLU on Friday night.
All right.
Okay, now to football. We have a couple of big hot topic issues since we last podcasted.
What happened? I missed something?
Yeah.
Oh.
You missed a little bit.
Sorry.
So Josh Heupel is now enjoying his climate a lot more than most people in Columbia are enjoying theirs.
Yeah, it's cold.
It is cold. But he's in Orlando. He accepted the UCF job, which was announced Wednesday afternoon. I believe that's correct. Tuesday afternoon. Felt like yesterday.
Game day.
Tuesday afternoon, yeah. So he basically taking what I feel like, and I know a lot of other people feel this way too, is probably the best non-Power 5 job in the country.
Without a doubt.
I mean, that school is huge. It's got a ton of resources.
A lot of pockets,
and it's in a great area for recruiting purposes. It'd be a great spot to go to, even if they weren't very good, and they're 12-0.
Yeah.
So he's got a massive platform to build off of, too.
And a conference is rising when it comes to football. I mean, both Central Florida and Memphis aren't cupcakes anymore.
No.
They used to be, but they are not cupcakes.
Right, they're very good.
Yeah.
So really talented conference, really talented players on the team right now, and a lot of upward potential for that program. And it was interesting that Josh Heupel got that opportunity,
yeah.
I think. It was something that caught me off guard a little bit. I know there's a lot of people that feel that way, too.
Well, I remember I was sitting in my living room writing, preparing for the men's game, and I got off Twitter so I could just get everything done because I get too distracted when I have Twitter up. And I got back on, and all I saw was I saw just a bunch of stuff from Josh Heupel. I go, what? It was like a half hour. I go, what did I just miss? And it was, I don't know, it came out of nowhere, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was that job, I think that's kind of the direction they went in with Frost, was bring in a coordinator that we think could do pretty well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, to go to Heupel, who has no head coaching experience, and he had a great career playing at Oklahoma as a quarterback. He was an All-American, AP Player of the Year. Then he was a coach at Oklahoma, co-offensive coordinator, and had a lot of success there, but then kind of got ran out of town. Bob Stoops basically let him go, fired him. And so he kind of went on this redemption tour, starting with Utah State. He was an offensive coordinator there, which, it's kind of like an outpost of college.
Right.
College football. Then he got hired by Barry Odom at Mizzou, made the most of that opportunity, rebuilt Mizzou's offense from a terrible offense in 2015 to a very good offense in 2016 and 2017. So Josh Heupel was in Orlando earlier this week, and we'll get to this comment by, what does that say?
Being American.
Being American. You think that's his name?
That's the very American
or her,
name.
Or her given
that's
name?
That's a very American name.
The question is, who is going to coach or be the offensive coordinator for the bowl game, which I'm guessing Being American is talking about Missouri? It's a good question. I don't think it's going to be Josh Heupel.
I doubt it's Josh Heupel.
Because, first of all, in his press conference Tuesday in Orlando, he told reporters he was planning on being at UCF's bowl game, which is the Peach Bowl on January 1st. He's planning on being there. So if he's going to be there, then his attention's probably not going to be on Mizzou. Second of all, and this is really the bigger reason, as a head coach, the early signing period starts in less than 2 weeks.
Right, he's got to recruit now.
Yeah, you got to have your ducks in a row right now.
And then even on top of that, you have to be at all the recruits who've already committed to Central Florida's house yesterday.
Right.
You'd be like, hey, exactly. I'm the new head coach, like, stay on, we're going
to
be good.
Right, so there's no reason for him, I don't think, to be at Missouri and coaching the Tigers. I think his attention is definitely going to be on UCF, as it should be. If you're hired to that sort of head coaching job, then you need to have a singular focus. So I really don't think it'll be Josh Heupel. Now, out of Missouri's coaches now, it's a good question because, that was Josh Heupel's, that was his creation, essentially, as a quarterback's coach and as the offensive coordinator. So, you'd think maybe Andy Hill would be somebody that could take over kind of through the bowl game. He's been there for a long, long time, and is a wide receivers coach. Before they hired Josh Heupel, he was the quarterback's coach, but his natural position is the wide receivers coach.
Right.
So there's a possibility that Andy Hill could do it. Jojon Finley, if he doesn't get hired at UCF, he is the Tigers' tight ends coach. He could be somebody that could call plays for the Tigers as well. That would be kind of my guess. One of those two would be probably the most likely, but they haven't made an official announcement. They are going to open up practice tomorrow to media availability. I imagine that'll be the first question that gets asked is what are they going to do for the bowl game, and then who are you looking at going forward? So that's what we'll try to find out this week. You got to bring in somebody from the outside, I think, that can coach quarterbacks.
I agree.
So I don't think that they're going to hire an offensive coordinator from within. I'd be really surprised if they did that. Trying to pick out outside candidates is tough, too, because there's a million people out there, especially now, that all these coaches have gotten fired. And so you got offensive coordinators just kind of out there in the ether.
Right.
Whose tethers have just been cut. The one that is most intriguing, I think, for a lot of reasons, and this is a name that resonates with me as somebody who kind of grew up watching Missouri playing in the Big 12, is Graham Harrell, who's now the offensive coordinator at North Texas and used to be the quarterback at Texas Tech when he set all kinds of records under Mike Leach's offense. The connection there is that Graham Harrell played under Mike Leach at Texas Tech and got his coaching start under Leach. And that was also how Josh Heupel was reared.
Right, right.
Played under Mike Leach at Oklahoma, then kind of developed a system around, very close to Mike Leach's system. So there's kind of like some philosophical connections there, which would be interesting. Another name that's floated around, and I'll get your opinion on this, Hugh Freeze from Ole Miss. He was an offensive guy when he was there, coached Ole Miss to some pretty legitimate success, beat right. Alabama twice, I think. Would you take Hugh Freeze, if you're Jim Sterk or Barry Odom, would that be a name that was even on your radar? With all the recruiting violations and the burner cell phone that accidentally dialed
He didn't do it. He sat on his phone and accidentally dialed all of the numbers. Didn't dial speed dial. It dialed all of the numbers.
Has that ever happened in human history where you sit on your phone and it dials
every
10
number,
numbers exactly, or 7 numbers?
To the exact phone number? Yeah, no, that's probably. That he, yeah. if I was Jim Sterk in that administration, I wouldn't look at Hugh Freeze.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just too much baggage for a program that has been, that has just had nothing but good news for the last month and a half. Like, you don't want that, especially with everything that just went on in Tennessee. Not saying that's ever on the level of the same whole Graciano situation.
Whatever happens at Mizzou, it starts a comparison to what happened at Tennessee.
Right.
It's not something I want to be a part of.
Exactly.
Yeah, not something anybody wants to be a part of.
I think you look elsewhere. I think there's plenty of other qualified offensive coordinators in the country.
I agree with you, especially for a coordinator position.
Right.
That's not something that you want as a distraction. If you're willing to take that chance on a head coach, I think that's one thing. And I'm not saying that that's a good idea, mm-hmm. but to do it for a coordinator is something totally different because
right.
you have a guy above him. And, I mean, you're Hugh Freeze would be the story of the season.
Oh, every game.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's not something I don't
think. Especially the way they set up availability. It'd probably be different if they had Hugh Freeze, but like you guys would talk to Josh Heupel every week.
Mm-hmm.
To do that, to talk to Hugh Freeze every week would be completely, like, it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's it? Can you read this comment?
Paul Wade said, did he dial that number off the top of his head into the school phone?
It was a school-provided cell phone.
Yeah, it was a school-provided.
Because they got his records. That's
right.
how they found it.
Right.
And that was like the whole, it was, it was this whole scandal because it was the former coach, like, had leaked.
It was.
Information.
Wasn't it like somebody from the, like, Mississippi State? It was like a rivalry. It was like one of Ole Miss's, like, rivalry schools. Like leaked that like this had happened.
Well, I think it was somebody from that was spurned by Ole Miss and got might have been Houston Nutt. I don't remember. That okay. may or may not be true. It was somebody that was a part of that situation at Ole Miss who kind of got the dirt thrown on top of them.
Right.
And then they came back and said, "Hey, we have some information on the guys
on
that
the
are
guy.
There,"
yeah.
and that ended up kind of being the catalyst
that's
for the whole thing.
That's all new level of petty.
It is all new level
yeah.
of petty.
Yeah.
Another question, how does this affect recruiting?
I was going to ask you that.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to go out and get a quarterback, no? You have to.
Yeah, you'd think so. It's that is obviously, you know, the main question
yeah.
is now what happens with Drew yeah. Lock?
I think you have to. I don't think it's this thing of like, maybe we can wait. Maybe Drew will stay. Like, you got to get a quarterback. I mean, unless you trust.
Top priority anyway.
Right, unless you trust Micah to run this offense next year.
I don't think Mizzou feels that
exactly.
way.
Exactly.
So, here's what I've heard from people that know Drew Lock. And this, and also, you know, Andy Locke said this, I think, to the Kansas City Star this week. I mean, the question immediately was, what's Drew Lock's reaction going to be? And Andy Locke basically said, you know, we're going to I don't think it, like, basically the sentiment of his response was, this doesn't change a whole lot for us right now. And so I think Drew Locke's his future, whether Josh Heupel was going to be there or not, rests on his draft grade.
I agree.
And what he gets out of that. If it's a first-round draft grade that comes back pretty positive, then he's probably going to go, and he probably would have gone even if Heupel was here. If it's a second-round draft grade or he doesn't get one at all, then there's a pretty good chance that he's going to come back regardless.
Right.
And it's the other thing to keep in mind is, I mean, this year's quarterback class has a lot of really good quarterbacks with Josh Rosen and Darnold from USC and Allen at Wyoming, Baker Mayfield. I mean, all four of those guys are probably going to be first-round picks.
Yeah.
So now you have a situation where Drew Locke, where does he fit in there? Would he rather roll the dice next year? So I think that has more to do with anything. But to go back to recruiting, how does it affect recruiting? I think that's a good question. I don't know how many guys on the offense, you know, came to Mizzou to play for Josh Heupel.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you want an offense that's ideally similar in style because those are the guys that you've gone out and recruited
right.
is to play in that sort of system, an
right.
offense-heavy or a pass-heavy offense, you know, spread. I guess I shouldn't say pass-heavy. Missouri was pretty 50-50 when it came to run and pass balance this year, but definitely it's an offense where the pass game is the probably the top priority. So I think that's you want somebody coming in that's going to install a similar offense because then you don't have to overhaul your recruiting class. So we'll see. The signing day starts on December 20th. Mizzou has 16 commits right now in the class of 2018. Two in Missouri, I think. There's a Raytown.
Daniel Parker from Blue
Daniel
Springs.
Parker and a Raytown receiver, Dominic Jacinto. I'm trying to think if there's...
Was there a Lee Summits defensive back that just committed last week?
There was a defensive back that committed this week, but he is from Texas.
Okay. Yeah, right.
I believe Converse, Texas.
Okay.
So I believe there's two Missouri guys in there right now, a number of guys from Texas, and signing day is on the 20th. So it kind of changes the game a little bit for how you prepare for your offseason.
Now, they still have – this is the early signing period.
Yeah.
So they sell. So if they don't sign, like their class is not finished after December 20th.
That's right. That's right.
Just want to make sure people understand that.
Right. February is still the regular signing period.
Okay.
I think that is all that we got right now.
Yeah.
Mizzou basketball tomorrow, or Mizzou women's basketball tomorrow, Mizzou men's basketball on Saturday.
Yeah. And then a week off for pretty much everything. For
finals week.
And then Mizzou, men's kick back off on the 16th.
So we'll have all your coverage in the paper then.
Yeah, you will probably be – Danny's going out of town next week, so we'll probably be on a week break for podcasts.
I will be on vacation next week. But so the next podcast we do, you were saying today, is probably going to be right before the Bragging Rights game.
Yeah, you're going to hit you with a bunch of podcasts that week. We'll have the preview to the Bragging Rights game, after the Bragging Rights game. And then
we're just throwing podcasts
around. If you guys want, we could just do a podcast just previewing the bowl game.
We could do that.
We could
that
do
wouldn't
it.
Be a bad
hit
idea.
You with a podcast every day. Five podcasts. No, I'm just kidding. We're not doing that. That's way too much.
Too many. Back it off a little bit.
But yeah, we'll make up for the missed week for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Follow Cam on Twitter at CJ_Teague and me at Daniel_M_Jones. Maybe I should say that faster next time. People have to re-listen on like 0.6 speed to get all that. Daniel_M_Jones. Read all our work in the paper or at columbiatribune.com and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud or whatever. We will see you again 1 week before Christmas.
Yep.
Subscribe to Mizzou Sports Podcast at iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher.